Radio Netherlands. Get stuck into a good program instead of glued to the television.
Every time I watch the TV, I hear about OJ. Now it's getting really old and I wish that it would go away. Well, I don't know if he did it, but neither does the press.
Next thing they'll say that he liked to wear a dress.
All this talk of murder is giving me the blues. I'm getting really sick of seeing OJ on the news.
Media Network. Trust us to come up with something different.
Yes, O.J. Simpson's been dominating all the networks across the USA and many of the satellite channels in Europe. But I can assure you, this network will talk about media for the next half an hour or so. Hello, I'm Jonathan Marks. Talking of satellites, I note that at 19 hours UTC today, Europe will get another satellite channel. It's BBC World on Eutelsat 2F1. And according to the test card last night, the exact frequency is 11619.66 gigahertz. The bandwidth setting is 27 megahertz, and the good news is that the programming will be in regular PAL, no scrambling. Of course, it'll be curious to watch the BBC with commercials, at least in this part of the world. It seems that Ford has booked the first spot. Viewers in Asia get BBC News with advertising sold by Star Television out of Hong Kong already. Well, as one channel switches on, so another channel is losing some of its distribution, at least in these parts, as Diana Janssen now reports.
Here in the Netherlands, just under 500,000 subscribers to the Amsterdam cable network KTA can no longer watch the daily programmes of Deutsche Welle Television. Last year, the German satellite television station was put on the Amsterdam cable system as an experiment, replacing the domestic German broadcaster Westdeutsche Rundfunk. Until that moment, a rather popular station in Amsterdam, due to the wide variety of movies that it broadcasts. The switch from WDR to Deutsche Welle didn't go smoothly, with the result that the Amsterdam Programme Council, that selects which channels are distributed, has now decided to end the experiment and put WDR back on the cable. Their action resulted in several bouquets of flowers being delivered to those on the council.
More radio stations are starting to broadcast via the new Astra 1D satellite, which is gradually entering service. They use the traditional analogue sub-carriers which accompany the television pictures, and these stations can therefore be picked up on simple home equipment. However, many of the radio stations in Holland that are mainly interested in distributing their signals to cable companies are switching to digital transmission methods. On the one hand, this is much cheaper, but it means that home reception is then impossible. The Dutch station Radio 538 has now moved to digital transmission via the Eutelsat 2F1, and the radio stations Giro Jazz and the Gouden Ouwezender, or the Golden Oldie station, have started to broadcast digitally to Dutch cable systems via the Eutelsat 2F3. Now to the answer line.
This is Randy in Carson, California, United States of America. On Monday, a federal judge ruled that there was a pirate station in Berkeley, California called Radio Free Berkeley, and the FCC would like to shut them down. And a federal judge ruled that they cannot do that because certain constitutional questions are extremely important.
Indeed, that virtually means that at the moment in the USA, if you have a low-power transmitter of, let's say, under 10 watts, and you don't cause interference on FM, the FCC will have problems stopping you broadcasting. FCC officials in Washington, D.C. told us that the ruling could set a precedent, but they are pursuing other channels. In the meantime, in New Zealand, where apparently there are no longer any controls on pirate broadcasting, the low-power shortwave station Kiwi will be testing its transmitter and antenna patterns this weekend. Graham Barkley, owner and operator, is specifically interested in reception reports from Europe and Asia. Of course, letters from anywhere in the world are also welcome. They're planning a test transmission this coming Saturday morning for a couple of hours on January the 28th on 7445 kHz upper sideband, starting from about 0630 UTC. You can send your reception reports to Graham Barkley, P.O. Box 3174, Onekawa, that's O-N-E-K-A-W-A, Napier in New Zealand. A special request, though, don't write Kiwi on the envelope. You can also call during the broadcast on the new telephone number 64 for New Zealand, then 684 48166. One other point, it looks like the Voice of Vietnam's arranged a relay agreement with a foreign power. 5940 kilohertz is being heard on the east coast of North America between 04 and 6 hours. It's believed that the broadcasts originate from a transmitter site in Russia.
Media Network, the original communications magazine. Accept no substitutes.
Joining me now with more media news from the World Radio TV Hamburg editorial office in Amsterdam, here's Andy Sennett. Andy, there have been some cutbacks again, haven't there?
Yes, Israel Radio finally made some big cuts in its foreign service on the 22nd of January. That's after several weeks of confusion and postponements. The current situation is that there are now just three daily English broadcasts on shortwave at 05, 11 and 20 hours UTC. The transmission at 20 hours has been cut back to just a news bulletin, and it's followed by one in French at 20:15 and in Spanish at 20:30. And the frequencies in use at that time are 17575, 11603, 9435, 7465 and 7405 kilohertz.
And according to reports on internet, it looks as though they've actually increased the output in other languages, namely Russian. Also news of the demise of a well-known DX club.
Yes, it was quite a shock to read on the internet that the American club SpeedX has been forced to close down due to financial problems. Ironically, just after I read that news, I opened my mail and I found a very impressive January issue of their bulletin with no mention of the closure. So apparently the decision had to be made at very short notice. Now, I've read every issue of the SpeedX Club bulletin in the 16 years I've been working for WRTH, and it will be sadly missed.
Indeed, if I recall rightly, SpeedX stood for the Society for the Preservation of the Engrossing Enjoyment of DXing. It's becoming increasingly difficult to operate viable hobby clubs with the rising cost of postage, printing, and the competition from the new information sources, such as the internet. Let's hope, though, this isn't the start of a new trend.
Indeed, we still get lots of valuable information from the traditional printed bulletins, and I can read those on the train, too. But back to the internet, where Ed Lewis in the USA reported that the schedule he received from Prophecy Countdown refers to a special program over WVHA on 7465 kilohertz at 0130 UTC on the 31st of January. That's the evening of the 30th in North America. At that time, there will be an official handover of the station, formerly WCSN, from the previous owners, the Christian Science Church.
So get your tape recorders ready. The time again, 0130 UTC on the 31st of January. Now, what's next?
A change of address, Jonathan. Dave Kenny at BBC Monitoring mentioned recently that mail to the Voice of Asia radio station in Taiwan was being returned undelivered. Well, a bit of research by Tetsuya Kondo in Japan has revealed that they did change their address in July 1994. They can now be reached at P.O. Box 24-777, Taipei, Republic of China. And they can also be reached by fax on country code 886, area code 2, then 751-9277. Now, the Voice of Asia broadcasts in English between 11 and 12 hours UTC on 7445 kilohertz shortwave and 585 kilohertz medium wave.
So you should be able to hear that in the Far East. The frequency again, 7445 kilohertz shortwave, and the time, 11 hours UTC. Now, news of a station much closer to home, to Europe.
Yes, in the 1995 edition of WRTH, we mentioned that the Voice of the Mediterranean, based in Malta, plans to start a French service. Well, according to the January bulletin of French club Amitié Radio, it has already started. The broadcasts are, for the time being, on Sundays only, at 0635 to 07 hours UTC, on 9765 kilohertz, 9765, and 1435 to 15 hours UTC on 11925 kilohertz, 11925. Both transmissions are also on medium wave, 1557 kilohertz, and that means the English program on Sundays is reduced from 1 hour to just 35 minutes.
And from Malta, we move on to Moldova.
Yes, Unda Libera, a student radio station in Chisinau, the Moldavian capital, has decided to assist Radio Moldova International in trying to improve reception. RMI broadcasts over transmitters in Romania, but they need some help finding some clear frequencies. So the people at Unda Libera have set up a special mailing address for reception reports and comments. It's RMI Monitoring Action, P.O. Box 9972, Chisinau, spelled Chisinau, 70, Moldova, postal code 277070. Programs in English are currently on the air to North America at 02 hours UTC on 7190 kHz and 13 hours UTC on 15315 kHz. And to Europe, Radio Moldova International is on the air at 1430 UTC on 15315 kHz and 1830 UTC on 7235 kHz.
Yes, I was listening to 7235 kHz last night at 1830 UTC. I'm afraid the frequency is a bit of a mess. Well, from programmes to people and prizes.
Leo Schenk, Deputy Director of Programmes for the Econ Television Company here in the Netherlands, has been named Broadcaster of the Year by the Dutch media magazine Broadcast. He was given the prize for his moving and controversial documentary about euthanasia, entitled Death on Request. The programme has since appeared on many foreign television stations.
Matthias Kopf, who lives in Bad Hersfeld in Germany, keeps an accurate survey of clandestine stations on shortwave. And according to his statistics over 1994, activities decreased by 6.1%. So that 115 less hours a week. The new total is 1,768 hours of clandestine broadcasts each 7 days, of which 1,075 hours originate in Asia. Iraq and Iran remain at the top of the list as the source of these political programmes beamed to countries where the organisations concerned can't get local airtime. Matthias is organising a clandestine radio contest, incidentally, from April the 14th to the 16th this year. More details by sending a fax with your name and address to 49, that's the country code for Germany, and then 66211582. That's 49 for Germany, then 66211582. And now, if we got the timing right, it's the contest.
Radio Netherlands, the station with big bells.
Yes, your second and last chance to win a World Radio TV handbook in the Media Quiz 1995. No slogans to write or sentences to complete. Listen and win. Although we understand the tape recorder will help enormously.
In a few seconds we'll play you bells as played by international broadcasters on the air several times each day. Remember, we want to know the countries from where the bells toll. Just to make it a little bit more difficult, we've mixed the bells together, so you'll have to dig them out. There are five in total, and here they come. Don't worry, we won't play that tape again. Now put the five countries on a postcard or in a letter, add your name and address, and tell us how long you've been listening to Media Network. Send your entry to The Big Bells Contest, Media Network, Radio Netherlands, P.O. Box 222, 1200 JG, Hilversum, the Netherlands. You can also fax the entry to 3135 724239.
You must postmark your entry by next Monday, January the 30th. And the prizes, we're giving away four copies of the World Radio TV Handbook 1995, just out from Billboard Publications, and the top prize winner will get the WRTH plus the new satellite guide, a total value of $50.
Now news in brief. The Voice of Malaysia reports that it's planning to add audio subcarriers to allow its external service to be heard across Asia. But the launch will have to wait a while until the Malaysian satellite Miasat goes up in 1996.
And a new shortwave listener organisation has started up. It's called the South Pacific Union of DXs, or SPUD for short. Secretary Paul Newton says they want to encourage a new, fresh approach to international radio down under. The annual subscription is $30 Australian, and the address for more information is SPUD, P.O. Box 33, Montrose, Victoria, 3765 in Australia. They also have an electronic address, and that is pneW@spec.apana.org.au. I think the snail mail is much easier. Now, there have been delays to shortwave plans for another station. Back to Andy.
Yes, according to the Tropical Tuning newsletter from Venezuela, and that's also received via the internet, Radio Barquisimeto in Venezuela was about to start transmissions on 9510 kHz around Christmas time, but during the holiday period, the radials of the shortwave antenna were stolen by thieves who wanted to sell the copper. Fortunately, the station was insured, and as soon as they receive the insurance money, they'll put in some new radials, and then they'll be able to start on 9510 kHz.
A frequency to watch. OK, now to some religious news.
Yes, the Muslim holy month of Ramadan is scheduled to begin on either the 31st of January or the 1st of February. Now, the significance of that for the radio enthusiasts is that the schedules of stations in the Islamic countries are extended late into the local night hours. Now, this opens up additional long-distance medium-wave reception possibilities, while at the same time, some increased interference may be noted on shortwave during February, with stations in these countries staying on the air later than usual.
Notably Indonesia, for instance, for people listening in Asia. Well, hopefully, of course, that extra extended broadcasting won't affect any of our transmissions.
Indeed, Jonathan. Now, finally, something for people who like monitoring different transmitter sites. The Italian external service, RAI, is now on the air for 1 hour a day via the BBC's Far Eastern Relay Station in Singapore. The programme is in Italian, and it's at 10 to 11 hours UTC on 11850 kHz, 11850 beamed to Asia, and RAI already uses the BBC relay station on Ascension Island.
Media Network, Skywave Patrol.
Right, what's orange? Contains 100 maps, 300 drawings, and hundreds of names and addresses. The answer is the WRTH Satellite Broadcasting Guide. It's edited in Holland by Bart Kuperus. And so I went out to the Flevopolder, where he lives, to find out more about this new particular book. The cover may be familiar, but a lot has changed in the 95 edition.
The book is a little bit bigger than the first edition, of course, despite the failure of some satellites that plunged into the ocean. There are a lot more satellites broadcasting more programs at the moment, and that's all incorporated now in this new edition of the Satellite Broadcasting Guide.
So who's it intended for? I mean, is it for professionals or what?
It's intended for both professionals and the novice, the layman. If you buy an Astro Dish here in Europe, and you want to scan the sky, you get some pictures on the screen, you want to know what satellite it comes from, because there are a lot of broadcasting satellites at the moment. So it doesn't mean that when you get a picture on your TV set, you're aiming at the Astra satellite. So in trying to take the new Astra dish owners by the hand and lead them through satellite land. Also, broadcasting techniques, the more technical digital techniques like single channel per carrier, SIPC, all those transponders have been listed as well. So also for the professional, the book is very useful.
But supposing you live in a place like Mauritius or Southern Africa, I mean, does that mean to say you just dream about things that are happening up north and you can't see on your dish?
The footprint maps in the book clearly indicate where you can watch what satellite. So if people want to know if they can receive certain programs, the only thing they need to do is just look it up whether or not the footprint is also in their area of that particular satellite they want to receive.
Okay, flicking open the book, on page 82, you start with what's called the European KU Band Picture Gallery. That's new.
Yes, that's new. I decided to put in a kind of picture gallery of screenshots of all the transponders and stations that are available on Q-band, KU-band in this hemisphere in Europe at the moment. Because there are so many satellites spaced very closely together, it's very easy to mistake one satellite for another. So just merely as a guide and to help people recognize and determine what satellite they're watching, this picture gallery was incorporated in the book.
Just as an aside, how do you take pictures of a television? You have to use a camera?
In the old days, I used a camera, and it was pretty cumbersome because you have to have a very close tolerance in the shutter opening. Otherwise, you get weird patterns in your picture, or it's overexposed. I have a Apple Macintosh 660 AV machine now, which is doing everything for me. I just plug in a composite video signal, and I make a screen picture of every test pattern or every screen I come across, and I think is worth with storing, so it's all digital.
So including a picture of the Pope, I see.
Yes, that's Vatican TV. That's a picture I took on the Eutelsat 2 WEF 3 at 16 degrees east.
But in the first edition, you had reviews of equipment, and you were testing stuff in the same way that the WRTH tests shortwave stuff. But that's missing from this book.
Yes, that was dropped out of this book this year deliberately, because the book is sold worldwide. And receivers in, for instance, the United States, they have other specifications than receivers, for instance, in Asia or Australia or even here. If you want to watch the Astra satellites, you need receivers that have Wegener Panda or compatible audio noise reduction systems in it. You don't need that, for instance, in the States. We have encryption methods here in Europe, VideoCrypt and EuroCrypt encryption methods you don't see in the States or anywhere else. They have VideoCipher or Leech or other encryption systems. So it was almost impossible to test all receivers of all countries in the three ITU regions. So I decided not to to incorporate any receiver tests in the book anymore, and save that space for more interesting and important satellite-related material.
Well, I must confess, I've put up a satellite dish in the garden, a steerable one. I spent the odd moment zapping across the satellite bands. What a mixture.
At 20 to 9, wartime heroics in Battleground. Tomorrow on TNT.
Look, I am just not going to do it, even for a story. I'm not going to show up nude on the streets of New York. Forget it. Jeannie Mo, CNN, New York.
Tuesday on QVC, watch out for the first appearance of the 9-carat gold 7-inch silk rope bracelet.
Yes, tune in not for the program, but for the product. But as well as the regular stations, you can also find broadcasters feeding their material from one point to another. The news feeds are probably the most interesting things you can find, but because they're not regular, they're more difficult to locate.
Most broadcasters do use fixed channels, and they have their video link channels on the particular satellites, and I list those as well, the channels, the transponders that show frequent video activity, uplinks from satellite news gathering units, short SNG units all over the world, that are relayed through those transponders, reporters doing reports from certain areas in the world. That's the most important. Luckily, those feeds are not encrypted, unless you have the Reuters feeds, of course, the regular feeds on the Eutelsat satellite. They are, unfortunately, encrypted. But there are still a lot of open channels available, and especially now what is happening, transpiring in Chechnya, the horrible things that are happening now. The satellites are buzzing with activity from those areas, of course, and that's the interesting thing of watching satellite television.
It's a sort of video equivalent, let's say, of shortwave radio, I guess, being able to hear the hotspots and being able to watch them.
Yes, you see the raw feeds before they are edited by the news agencies, and it gets to you. If you see pictures from Chechnya, they're not censored in any way, and their heart, it's reality, and it comes to you on the picture tube, unedited. So it's as if you're over there with that reporter in that very place, witnessing all the atrocities that are going on.
Are there some fun spots? I mean, is it all bad news?
Oh no, not at all. There are also fun spots, of course. There's the monthly broadcast of Telesatellite, a German satellite magazine. It's on the Copernicus satellite at 28.5 degrees east at the moment. They always have a lot of novelties, and it's been made by people that are very enthusiastic and for the hobby, the satellite hobby, and it's very nice to see that. Of course, you have all the other regular programs unencrypted. Most satellites, they broadcast unencrypted, so there's really a surplus of programs you can watch, and that's a nice thing.
One thing that's been happening in the last couple of weeks, of course, is the testing of the Astra 1D satellite. It's now come on, but everybody expected it to be all fully booked and so forth. But SES doesn't seem to have sold, at least so far, all of the transponders.
Well, they claim they have, but we haven't seen much on the Astra 1D satellite. Lately, a few channels have been witnessed. My brother called me the other day that RTL4 has started up on an Astra 1D transponder, and the Franco-German cultural channel RT has started up. Also, NBC Super Channel will start up imminently. We won't see the 16 transponders filled up right away. It will be gradual, and I think it will take about half a year or somewhat longer before most of the transponders are occupied. Furthermore, Astra is going to use a few transponders also for digital tests we cannot witness with regular satellite receivers. So I think we will see about 10 or 12 transponders occupied by regular broadcasters, and that the rest of the transponders will be used for digital MPEG tests or other purposes.
MPEG is what, the idea of moving towards video on demand?
Yes, that's the MPEG standard which they are testing with now. That's the MPEG 2 standard, Moving Pictures Experts Group. It's an abbreviation for that. It's a bitrate reduction technique with which it will be possible to broadcast 6 or 7 channels of video on one transponder. And then it will be possible, of course, because you have so many possibilities to broadcast one movie and start again every 15 minutes, so you can always watch that movie and have it revolving 24 hours or something like that. So you tune in to one particular movie and pay for that. That is one opportunity. Of course, there are many more opportunities for MPEG. Those opportunities are now being explored in the States, of course, where they are really broadcasting in the MPEG standard through the DirecTV satellite. And you can really buy pizza-sized dishes in the States already and watch Laserdisc quality pictures being broadcast in MPEG.
The World Radio TV Handbook has lots of addresses for radio and television stations around the world. At the back of the Satellite Broadcasting Guide, there are also addresses for the satellite broadcasters. Do they respond? I mean, obviously people don't write to them for QSL cards, I guess. There's no tradition like that as there is with shortwave.
No, but people will like to know what, for instance, broadcasters are planning, or if they hear a radio station, certain radio station on a subcarrier, they want to know from the broadcast themselves whether or not they're there to stay or if it's a test or something else. So that's why I listed a lot of broadcasters in the back of the book, so people can call them and ask them about their intentions if they're going to move satellites, because there are a lot of things happening on satellites. The stations are moving. Lately here in Europe, all the Turkish stations have been moving from Eutelsat satellites to the new Turksat satellite. And of course, because of so many changes, people want to keep up with the changes, and they're calling the Turkish authorities themselves and ask them what their future plans are. And that's the reason why all those addresses are in the book.
And in your own research, trying to call these stations, do you find that they're very forthcoming? Do they know about satellite technology?
Well, it's funny that some stations, if you call them, are not even aware that they are on satellite, but the awareness is slowly coming up. And for instance, the IBA, the Israeli Broadcasting Authority, denied when I called them that they have been on satellite, but they have been on an old Intelsat satellite at 1 degrees west, and they moved to the new Intelsat 702. And then later I got a call back a few days later, and they admitted that they were on satellite, but they didn't want to give any details. But luckily, there are a lot of stations that are very eager to give you all the details about the availability of their station on satellite, and they're very cooperative.
Bart Kupiris, and the WRTH Satellite Broadcasting Guide, 1995, is published by Billboard Books of New York and Amsterdam. And the ISBN number, 0-8230-5955-3. And the cover price is $24.95. Back to the bands. It's been announced that after some delays, the UN has finally received permission to set up its own radio station in Rwanda. UNESCO told us this week that work's already started. 7 people have so far been appointed, but details of the frequencies aren't yet known. Initially, programmes will be on the air for 2 hours a day, aimed at Rwandan refugees in neighbouring countries as well as Rwanda itself. Languages used will be Kirwanda, French and English. And the station will identify in French as Radio Minoir. Now off to Melbourne, Australia, where Mike Bird is waiting with the propagation survey. Mike, what's it been like over the last 7 days?
The solar flux picked up and the geomagnetic field was quieter than we thought it would be. Solar activity was low all week. The solar flux was 87 on Wednesday the 18th, and by Tuesday it had risen to 97. The average works out to 93.5, which equals an effective sunspot number of 39, and that is up on the previous week's level of 18. The geomagnetic field disturbance indicator, the estimated planetary A index, ranged between 28 and 5, which represents active to quiet conditions. The magnetic field was active to stormy on Wednesday the 18th due to a coronal hole switching on a couple of days early. Since Thursday the 19th, the magnetic field was generally quiet.
And what about conditions between now and the 2nd?
Jonathan, it looks like more of the usual mixed bag. IPS Radio and Space Services expects solar activity will remain low. The geomagnetic field should remain quiet to unsettled until Monday the 30th, when another coronal hole should produce at least active conditions until Thursday the 2nd of February.
Thanks, Mike. Also to Diana Janser for background research this time, and also to everyone who's helped us trace some of the distribution problems with our programme schedule on target. We aim to get it right in March, I promise. Bye now.
Media Network. Copyright 1995.